Hi guys, summer's finally here and I'm looking forward to catching up with friends and family as much as possible. At all those get-togethers, I like to have the option of being able to moderate my alcohol intake without missing out on the occasion. That's when I love a refreshing Atopia and Tonic. It's an award-winning non-alcoholic spirit with all the flavour of a premium gin but less than 0.5% alcohol. Our friends at Atopia have given us an exclusive offer for Open Mind listeners. Just head over to clinkspirits.com and use the code OPENMIND at checkout to get £5 off a bottle of Atopia and free shipping. Enjoy the summer with a bit of mindful moderation. This podcast will contain real conversation around suicide. Listener discretion is advised, so please only listen if it feels safe for you. Hi, and welcome to Open Mind with me, Frankie Bridge. Today, I'm joined by multi-award-winning comedian, writer, and presenter, Russell Kane. Hi, Russell.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm good, you?
Yeah, good, thank you. I'm not going to lie, I was just refreshing my Insta feed. Maybe we should talk about that.
I was introing you onto my podcast.
It's because I've just done something that's quite sort of out of my comfort zone. And you know when you just want to do a safety check, have I fucked up? Because when you go on flight mode for an hour after dropping something a little bit out of your zone, 60 minutes later is too late to pull that out of the public sphere. So I just wanted to make sure it was all laughy faces, and now I'm in flight mode.
And as someone who your living is to make people laugh, you actually talk about mental health quite a lot. Like, your own podcast is all about men, like encouraging men to speak more, isn't it?
Yeah. So I started this, it was originally called Boys Don't Cry, and it's called Man Baggage now. It had a rebranding. So I noticed that when I first started doing this show about maybe 4 or 5 years ago, there was a bit of oh God, please come on. What have men got to moan about? Men have got all of the power, all of the privilege. It's like, oh, girls can't even have feminism now. Men have got to have something as well. Grow up, you fucking loser. I got a little bit of that online.
Really?
And it's really changed over the last 5 years because people tend to have brothers, husbands, sons and uncles. And whether you like it or not, men are 7 times more likely to top themselves, a lot more likely to get a mental illness. I don't have those stats at my fingertips, but basically we're just a lot more fucked up from aged 14 till age 70. So no one's suggesting that there's not a long way to go on feminism with equal wages and working out what happens when a woman has a child. It's not obviously not fair in the workplace. And we've seen safety issues with the Everard murder last year. We know we've got a lot to do with women. I'm not trying to take anything away from that. I'm just asking the question, if we fixed men a bit, might it help the struggle of feminism too? Question. Probably yes.
100%.
If you don't have toxic men beating their hairy or waxed chests, we don't even know what they're supposed to be anymore, insecure about their own masculinity, maybe they wouldn't be trying to earn more than women all the time to feel like men. Maybe that would disappear if men weren't bellends. So I thought, great. And that conversation started to happen. Men need to shit. Just time to talk. And all this great stuff started to happen. And guess who got left behind? All of the working class men who aren't comfortable putting on a cardigan and going to a coffee morning about men's feelings. Those things are important. They're vitally fucking important. It's important what we're doing now. But trust me when I say a large proportion of men, although they would agree with what I'm saying, cannot pick up that phone or go to that coffee morning. So we all sort of, pardon my language, sucking each other's dicks, doing all middle class things. And we're leaving behind your Gary's, Dave's, and Dwayne's of this world who might not have that verbal confidence to go, oh, I'm feeling a bit down. Because that's not the environment we grew up in if our dads were manual labourers or we came from single parent households.
So, and is that where you think it came from?
Yes.
You talk about a lot about the fact that your dad was like a proper lad.
Yeah.
Like,
he was a geezer.
No. And
geezer.
You're an Essex boy, aren't you?
He was a geezer rather than a lad. Yeah, I grew up in... a lot of my childhood was in Enfield on the border of Essex and London. And my dad was from Southend and Barking and Lee. And I ended up living in Southend. So, yeah, all around there. And there's definitely a masculinity culture there. So the very long, inarticulate answer to your question is I created this man baggage so there's more humour around the debate. And people are scared of using humour when they talk about mental health. I can't speak for women, and I'm pretty sure that using humour to discuss, I don't know, a miscarriage or infant cocktail, I don't know if it would work in the female realm. But with the things men are dealing with, testicular cancer, loss, death, suicide, marriage breakup, things just as heavy as what women are going through, for some bizarre reason, a little bit of humour can bring these guys just out into the conversation. I'm not saying your friend killed himself, ha ha. I'm saying, tits football, tits football, tits football. How are you, Gary? That's the technique. And I suppose the reason girls don't use it is girls don't need it. If that's the main difference I've seen between gender, I think that's what is the difference in the death rate. There is no difference between men and women. It's that women have other women. They surround themselves with other girls. It's all right. It's Frankie. Oh my God, she's not talking. Why is she not texting back? Prosecco ambulance. Frankie's house now. Aromatherapy candle. It can't be changed, babe, but at least we've spoken about it. That vibe. Whereas men are...
Prosecco ambulance.
But you know what men are like? You live with one. Men are, what's the point of talking about it if it can't be changed? It's broken. So I don't discuss it. What they don't realise is it's the discussing of something which cannot be fixed, which is in itself restorative and healing. That's the insight. So that's why we, that's why we talk shit a lot of the time.
But how did you get to the point of thinking, right, something needs to be done with this? Were you struggling? Were you, or did you? Could you just see it happening around you?
It came out of a stand-up routine I was doing. I used to do a routine about, oh, Carol's beak's gone grey, form a circle. And then I do like all the women for, guard the eggs, Carol's vulnerable. And then I do the man version going, Gary's got depression, put him in the bushes. I don't want to watch it. It's his deposit to Falaraki he's going to lose. It was just like a little joke. True. And then there'd be a laugh. But then I'd get messages afterwards going, it's so important what you're saying about men. I'm like, it's a throwaway line. And then I realised I was onto something. And then when I started doing Boys Don't Cry, or Man Baggage as it's now called, I started getting a lot of messages. And some men started telling me things that they've told no one. I've had at least a dozen big, burly, Gary, Dave types telling me their abuse stories that they have told, I mean, to not a soul, not a counsellor, not a teacher, not to their wives, not to a mate, to no one, just to put it out there. Please don't reply. I just want to tell you. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Oh, really?
I'm literally, if you listen to Man Baggage, we talk about, oh, why do men wax here? But it's humour all the way through with the occasional boom, boom, boom. That should tell you that we've got the wrong approach sometimes with some men. You know, the down the pub type thing, that banter is, gets a lot of stick, that word banter, and there is some banter that isn't healthy. But it can be a key sometimes to unlock some blokes. And that's why, girls, don't beat yourself up. It's not that he doesn't love you. It's not that there's anything wrong with your marriage, that he didn't confide in you. It's just sometimes not easy to have as a serious conversation. And that's hard for women to understand. It's like, but he's talking about a testicular cancer diagnosis is not revealed to me. I'm hardly going to come in with a clown nose on. But you'd be surprised that sometimes that direct approach can be very confrontational to some men, and they shut down, skeptic style.
I feel like you see a lot of that in the army. Like I found over the years of like going and, you know, meeting the troops and things like that. And like, I remember the shock of when, you know, someone came in and they'd lost like both their legs, and the banter and the jokes that would happen when they came in the room or whatever. But they always seemed really happy and to laugh a lot. Yeah. And I realised early on that is how men deal with it. Yeah. It might not work for everyone, but they did all seem genuinely, instead of ignoring it and being like, oh, he's coming in, no one look at the fact that he's in a wheelchair and da-da-da. It was spoken about, but they all spoke about it in a way that they all felt comfortable.
Exactly. It's probably how sport functions for, you know, why is football so much more popular with men than women? It shouldn't be on... You know, it's sport. We all like watching sport. It's theatre. But it probably stands in as a proxy for the type of socialising women can do, talking about the real shit. Men that can't do that, they'll put a football match in its place. And it's a way of hugging, of touching, of having contact, of having emotion together as men that feels safer. Then tell me about how you feel about your wife, Dave. Oh, I will, Terry. How's your intimacy issues with Debbie? It's just not going to happen.
No, that's so true. It's like that, is it Mickey Flanagan when he says like, oh, when we go out to the pub and your wife's like, oh, find out how Sue is, ask him how Sue is, and he's like, we're not going to talk about Sue. No. Like, we're not going to talk about the wives. Exactly. And like women, you go out and they would say like, oh, how's Russell doing? And you just don't have those same conversations.
I can come back from a 6-7 hour sesh at the pub with no details. And then it's like, she's like, you know, Jake lost his job. How's he coping? We didn't talk about, how can you fucking not talk about that? His wife's left him. How's his sick child and all that stuff? And she's like, what did you actually, there was no football match on. You were sat around a table. What the fuck did you talk about? And I have to think through, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure we just sent each other like rude memes off our phones watched porn together on her phone at the same time, talked shit, talked about watches. Have you seen that car? Fucking imagine how much that costs. Like teenagers, and then came home.
And had a great night.
It was.
I know nothing about
boobs,
each other.
Cars,
it's
porn,
so
home.
Funny, isn't it?
Nothing changes.
I feel like you talk about porn quite a lot.
Do I?
Do you remember we had to go up north to do like in-house chat?
I remember it.
And
yeah.
I was like interviewing you and like two other people. And you rightly so were talking about the effects of porn on young people and whatever and boys online. And the woman was literally at the back of the room just looking at me saying like, stop him,
we
stop
have
him.
But
I was like, I can't stop him. So I feel like that's something you feel very passionate
about.
It's
also part of the problem. As soon as we start to talk about sex with teenagers, oh, it's different, special. We need to get it signed off by lawyers. It's in a different... Why? This is the issue. By putting it on a high shelf in a spangly locked box that needs special lawyers to talk about, guess what the teenagers want to do? They want to open the box and they want to know what's in it. In cultures like a Dutch culture or Swedish culture where sex is taught and spoken about like we'd learn about the weather or the patterns of the ocean or the environment, where it's more normalised, where it's taught in primary school, in fact. Some countries teach sex education at 5, 6, 7 years old, and rightly so. Why is it put in some special, oh, it's not quite ready to talk about it yet? I've got a 6-year-old girl now. She's 6 in October, already curious about things like that, blushing when the Disney prince and princess kiss on screen. There's obviously something instinctive in children where they've got questions. Now, if you leave those questions unanswered till they're 13, 14, 15, they will go and answer them for themselves through experimentation. Mm-hmm. Same goes for drugs and all that. So I just believe in providing information neutrally to children. It shouldn't be like, oh, you know, we've discussed consensual sex when 8-year-olds are in the room. That's the age to start putting the knowledge in these children's heads before they're sexually active, before they have any feelings, so that when puberty does hit, particularly girls, are armed with information that's totally normal. Just like they know about who Henry VIII was, or they know how the weather works, or they know to recycle. All of those things should have equal billing, in my opinion.
Yeah. Did you have sex education at school? Because I remember in my year, at the last year of primary school, only one of the classes had it. And they all came out with like tampons and sanitary towels. And I remember being like, what is going on? But it was the only class. And then none of the other, it was like they saw them as being the ones that were kind of at that point, but the rest of us weren't.
I mean, ridiculous.
It's so weird.
It's rare that you would get anything at primary school in England. In fact, it's still, I'm pretty sure, enshrined in law that we don't teach it until secondary school. I mean, ridiculous. Even in Scotland, they've overturned that. And every time they try and bring that in this country, the same argument comes out. Exactly the same comments as you'll get from me saying this when you put this out, is that if you talk about sex to children that aren't yet thinking about sex, you encourage them to think about sex too early. Therefore, sex education belongs in secondary. I mean, it's totally ridiculous. They're not thinking about the Tudors. So let's not put thoughts of Henry VIII in their head too early in case they start beheading each other. Come on. Grow up. You teach a kid about fire safety, they don't go and start a fire. You teach a kid about hydrogen, they don't go and try and explode shit in the garden. Well, they would actually. That's a poor example. But yeah, so anyway, it's just something I feel really passionate about because teenage pregnancy rate's the highest in... Why is ours the highest in Europe? We're a rich country. You know, my mum was a very young... And my nan was 16 when she had my mum. My mum was barely out of her teens when she had me. It's like they could have lived a whole life and done loads of shit. They just didn't have the facts.
Yeah, because I find a lot of conversations now with my friends when we come down to talking about social media and issues that have happened at school and like hearing, you know, my kids are still relatively young. So some of my friends have older kids and hearing the things that have happened where a kid has said something and it's, you know, deemed wrong or whatever. And they all say, oh, it comes down to the internet and watching porn and whatever. But I feel like no one actually really knows what to do about it.
No.
Like, the porn thing seems to be what everyone's talking about, but nothing's changed.
Because you can't, it's obviously you can't control the internet, any aspect of it now.
No.
It's the genie's out of the bottle. So the only thing you can do as parents and or educators, if you're a teacher, is arm them with information. I mean, so me and my daughter, Minna, we just did a glamping trip, just me and her in this hut. It was fucking wicked. And then straight away, we got to use the facilities. Is that okay, Daddy? This is a public place. You know, is there going to be strangers there? Is it okay to get changed? And always I'm explaining the rules to her. That's her instinct now. Mm-hmm. Just check it. Someone was from our area. And they said, oh, I know that area. What school do you go to? I'm sorry, I don't know you well enough. You're a stranger. I can't tell you. Now, that is me explaining. It's not always appropriate to share your location or where someone can find you with someone you've just met. Now, she only knew that because I taught it to her. I don't want to bring up a generation of kids that are paranoid and think everyone's a sexual predator because I haven't even explained stuff like that to my child. But there's nothing wrong with explaining what's normal, what should be normal to a child. And if you have a son, I don't have a son, but if I did have a son, as soon as I thought they were getting near the age where they're going to be on their phones and looking up this stuff, which sadly it can be 11 or 12 years old, I would say you're going to encounter this stuff. It's normally American people. They're actors. Everything's over the top. And it's absolutely nothing like what goes on in the bedroom of adults. If you start to believe it, you will fail as a man and never have a girlfriend. I'd probably scare the shit out of him like with something like that. Then when he's watching it, it will always be in his mind, this is a pantomime fake version of sex. You just got to get it in there. I know it's embarrassing, but if you don't do it, your little boy's going to grow up thinking we're all supposed to be Californian porn stars and he's never going to have a healthy relationship with women or with men if you get a gay son.
Do you wish you had had that when you were younger?
Well, I'm fine. The internet, we forget how recent this is. The internet didn't even begin properly with working class people using it till 1997. I think broadband and stuff, you're looking at 2010. So most of us have not grown up. You and I now could go, right, we're going to go finish this call. Let's watch something dirty on our phone and stream at a high speed anything we want on our phone. Boom. Very recent. Our brains have finished growing. They finished growing when we were about, 18 if you're a girl and about 50 years old if you're a man. But once your brain's finished growing...
Not factually true.
Well, I'll give you some facts on that in a minute. If your brain's still growing and you smoke weed, for example, we know... If you have a spliff when you're 14, it's much more high risk than you have a spliff when you're 18, purely because your brain's still deciding its finished shape. So you put skunk weed over that brain at 14, higher risk of schizophrenia and behavioural issues. I truly believe, I'll probably sound like a right stick in the mud in 50 years, like some purity campaigner, but I honestly believe that if you pour porn on a brain that hasn't finished growing, it will warp the part of the brain that relates to sex. And men think about sex a lot. So if you pour poison on that part of a boy's brain that's growing to think about sex, it's obviously going to grow up warped. So the best thing you can do is make sure that they've got another intellectual process in place that's filtering that, knowing that it's pretend. I can go and watch a Liam Neeson movie now and watch a 70-year-old man smash the shit out of everyone. And I know it's fantasy because I've been educated to know it's fantasy. I don't think my granddad's going to go and like take out Sainsbury's or anything.
That's true.
It's interesting what you say. Sorry, I know I'm like someone's put a fucking 10p in me, but the part of it, this is one of the most depressing facts to share with women. So I've got a big family. I'm the oldest cousin, a lot of female cousins, a lot of female friends, all, you know, why does he cheat? Why does he like my friend's picture? And it's just all going for this. Just switch on Love Island if you want to know what goes on with women. Mm. I call it attracted to bastard disease. The part of a man's brain that deals with empathy, i.e., oh my God, I understand how that hurts you. Oh my God, you're making me cry. I'm getting emotional. Finishes growing when a man is anywhere between 40 and 45. That really? Is scientific fact. The part of the cortex that processes true, true empathy. You'll see it with, how old's your fella now? Is he 40 odd?
41.
So you'll see it. He'll start getting a bit tearful at the end of movie. Oh my God, you're going soft.
Yeah, he does. Things like that. He's become so much softer.
It's not soft.
And I noticed it with my dad.
Yes.
I noticed it with my dad. My dad would never really like hug or...
Yes.
And I remember the moment he hugged me and told me he loved me.
He'd be 40 odd. Remember 40 it. Odd. And the reason
and he
is
would have been 40
it's
odd.
Not softness. It's the part of the brain that processes those emotions and looks at someone and sees what they need, finally drops into place in the 40s. Now they think the reason, and obviously with a girl, as you will know, it's between...
Makes so much
it's
sense.
Between 18 and 21 in a woman. And the reason there's this massive disparity, they think, is evolutionary theorists think, back in the day, any men that were fully empathetic and gentle at 18 were just killed. They couldn't have defended you. You know, let's try and see his point of view, the one that's invading our camp, clubbed to death. So there's been an evolutionary pressure on men over time, whether we're boxers, comedians, footballers, warriors, whatever. The less empathy you've got, probably, the more successful you are. Sadly, for the gyeldem trying to get a boyfriend to be faithful, what I'm saying is date a guy who's 40 once you can, and you'll be it will all be gravy.
Is that what you're going to teach your daughter?
No, definitely not, ironically. But I'm just saying it's that's why there's this massive sort of disparity in male behaviour. You know, you've just got men have to use education and intellectual processes to check some of that more Neanderthal shit, which is totally possible, by the way, lads. No excuses.
Are you planning a party, a barbecue, or even a garden soiree this summer? Now we're getting used to hosting again, we have to cater to all the needs of our guests. Lots of my friends and family don't like to drink too much alcohol, but love the taste and the celebration, and there's no reason why they should lose out. I always make sure to have a bottle of Atopia on hand so I can rustle up a quick Atopia and tonic for the designated drivers, expectant mothers, or those who just want to take a night off. And it even goes down well with the big drinkers too. I believe moderation shouldn't come with a compromise. To get started on your cocktail journey, head over to Atopia Spirits to get inspired. Talking about internet and things like that, you have had an internet addiction, right?
I would say a compulsion that I'm definitely not...
A compulsion.
Definitely not over. Yeah, it's just that word addiction. If you use it, you can get in trouble. I have just made a documentary about it for Radio 4, and it fulfills most of the tick boxes for addiction, but not all of them. So it's a grey area. But so far as I literally... cannot stop myself unless I leave my phone at home. Definitely not over it.
Really? And what is that just going on? What do you go on?
Anything. Instagram, my photos, even photos I've taken, even in flight mode on the plane. I want to be like going through old photos or like deleting photos I don't need and then emptying my trash can. I'm just clearly addicted to the thing.
And do you find that annoying? Because I find like I go through stages where I feel I'm looking at my phone, but I don't even know what I'm looking at, and I'm annoyed at the fact that I'm looking at it, but I'm still doing it.
Yes, all the time.
It's so fucking annoying.
And when it starts to be a tick box for addiction is when you're doing that rather than stuff you used to do.
Something else,
which is what's happened. I'm a massive reader. Anyone who sees me do a podcast or film in this room, every wall is book lined. I'm definitely reading less than I was a few years ago. Sometimes I'll come in. This is terrible to admit. You know, I idolise my daughter. We're like best buddies. But I'll go upstairs, just going to get brush my teeth, get myself sorted. And I would have built in 5 minutes of a bit of laying and scrolling there. Why? Mm. For what purpose? It's different if I've just dropped a video and I've got to optimise the engagement and I need to reply to the comments. So Lindsay's, my missus, she's got a good solution. She has two phones and she has one that's got her social media on, like an older phone when she upgraded. And that just sits in the corner. So when she wants to check Twitter or Instagram, she goes over and picks up that phone, which obviously can only be used on Wi-Fi. So keep it in your bag when you get to a restaurant, because obviously with what we do, it is slightly more complicated. We have to be on social media. But still, you don't need to be on it when you're on the move, when you're this and that. So whenever you've just got your 4G or your 5G, be on your normal phone and have the basics on there. If you're running a business, you're probably need to email.
But you haven't done that.
No.
You haven't done it.
Tried it. It just doesn't work.
And why do you think that's it? You can't do it.
There's too many.
Or is it because of work?
Both. I think my work is, particularly in the last 2 years with comedy and getting content out there, I had no choice. It's all online and I feel like I'm falling behind if I'm not constantly doing like little updates or remarks. But it's got worse recently.
Doing your canins.
I think it's got worse recently, if I'm completely honest. Yesterday really? Was a really bad day. Bad to the point.
In what way?
I already had a lot on, so I was doing two different shows, recording two different shows. One was at a studio location, one was like this on Zoom. I'm writing a set for Netflix. I had a big gig in the evening which was being filmed to trial that set for Netflix. I'm working on a screenplay thing which I needed to write. I was cutting a comedy music track which I just dropped yesterday. And in between that, scroll every spare moment, making a cup of tea. I mean, it was like about 7, 8pm at story time, because my niece was staying and we were doing this nice group story time, I couldn't finish story time because it was like someone was pressing on both my temples and everything was swirling around in my head and all the scrolling. I thought, oh my God, am I going to have a stroke or something? I had to go downstairs and have, I just thought sugar, maybe like a sugar hit. I don't normally eat a lot of sugar. So I made a smoothie with loads of banana and honey in it and just sat in the garden, had to have a breath of fresh air. Like I'd OD'd on info. Lots of coffee, lots of scrolling, bang, my brain went. And my gig last night was, if I'm completely honest, a little bit flat. I was a bit sort of post-panic. You know when you sort of have one of those caffeine things where you're like, oh, I've had a moment there, and you're a bit sweaty afterwards. You've got to do a night's sleep before that resets. So yeah. I had to take that on stage last night, which wasn't nice. It was still a great set. No one in the audience would have known, but I was never fully at home. Yeah, it was a weird feeling. And I swear to God, it's from that fucking phone. I swear to God.
Do you not find, though, that because you were in between jobs, and was that almost like an avoidance tactic? Like, I've got all this stuff to do, but I can just sit and do this. I
didn't avoid anything. That's the worst thing about it. Nothing was avoided. No deadlines were missed yesterday. Everything was hit. And in between the gaps where I should have been sat there with a book or chilling or playing with my niece and my daughter, it was filled with pathetic scrolling. It's worse.
Does your daughter notice it?
Yes, yes. Please put the phone down, Daddy.
My son will say, "Mummy, put your phone down." Yes. Or, "Daddy, are you back on your phone again?" And when they say it,
heartbreaking.
Oh, it hurts, yeah. Doesn't it?
Is that right?
You just think, God, this is awful. Yeah. And they're calling us out. It should be the other way around.
You need some strategies in place.
And you think, how can you teach them to not be on their iPads and whatever if we're on ours all the
exactly.
time.
Exactly. And that's why I saw an online counsellor for a couple of sessions, but it wasn't much good. I thought, I think I probably do need to see someone about it, because it's getting in the way of healthy existence, basically. It is. Going out for dinner now, I don't take my phone. As long as one of us has got a phone in case we need to call a taxi, and Lindsay takes it, she's a lot more disciplined than me. Mm. I mean, it's causing a couple of rows in that Lindsay's turned all her alerts off. Text message alerts, WhatsApp alerts, everything's off. So as a couple, obviously, sometimes you just want to drop a WhatsApp. Please, can you turn the oven on for me? I'm going to stick my dinner in when I get in, and she won't see it. And then we have a row. So I have to phone all the time if I want to reach her, because I can't guarantee.
I was going to say, does it bother Lindsay? Because I find Wayne, sometimes if we're out for dinner, I'll be like, can you stop looking at your phone? Like, obviously, I look at mine. I'm not saying it's just him, but it really irritates me. Or like, more to the point, if we're with someone else, so say if we're out with another couple and someone's talking to them, he'll instinctively like pick up his phone and start looking at, and I'm like, someone's fucking talking to you.
Exactly. No, that's
embarrassing.
Awful. I get my phone goes in Lindsay's bag. That's how I get around that. So she keeps really? Both the phones. If we need both the phones, she keeps. Of course, she thinks it looks lame when a bloke has a bag anyway, because my clothes are so tight. You could sequence my DNA from my jeans. So I've got no pockets left. Even a credit card hurts. So Lindsay takes all my shit. She'll take my chewing gum. I have to take headphones as well, because she falls asleep like a zombie on the way home, and I'll need a podcast. She'll take my headphones, my phone, and she's got all my shit in her bag. And we have, that's one thing that's gone. I would never, ever on date night get my phone out. But can I go to the loo? Like, I'm just going to pop to the loo. It's difficult to go to the loo and leave her at the table and not take my phone with me for a cheeky scroll.
Why do we do this? I've realised I do this. Oh, my phone will be on the table. I'll get up to go to the toilet and I pick my phone up.
Terrible.
Why? It's so unsanitary.
It's disgusting.
As well.
And like a lot of men, this is an epidemic that men aren't talking about. Men are now doing sit-down wee. The sit-down wee amongst men is taken off. I cannot tell you, girls, because of these fucking phones. I'm straight into a cubicle, sit down, wait, boom. That's, I'm hitting some phone admin.
Go.
Yeah, exactly. It started, I think a lot of blokes get into the habit of it if you have a baby and it's female, because obviously during potty training, it's very confusing if a 12 or 18 month old sees daddy stood up. So I had 18 months of doors open and weeing sat down, hope that so Minna would copy me. And I've sort of realised, oh, God, I can still be on my phone while I'm doing that. And now I'm addicted.
Did you find that having your daughter kind of helped you to understand all these things more? Was you kind of thinking more about men's mental health and the way you act and this whole lad or geezer thing, as you say, before?
I don't think so. I think I'd got all of that sorted before I got married, to be honest, let alone had Minna. I'm definitely, I'm one of the older dads at the gates. Not that you need to look at me, but birth certificate gives the game away. I think I'd got my shit sorted. I was, you know, the childhood I'd had was such an alpha male geezer, knuckle-dragging, steroid-injecting Dave from Essex, you know, the metalworking, meat-eating, right-wing voting, weightlifting bouncer, fucking lifeguard, like that.
And did you fit into that?
No, I became the opposite. So when we all got sort of squirted out of the comprehensive system at 16 with shite exam results, most of my friends sort of became geezers, whereas I was just wanting to be in love and have a girlfriend. So from the age of 16 to, we're talking 33 here, one long-term relationship after another, maybe 2 weeks in between. I'd never had a one-night stand. I'd never been on a lad's holiday. I'd never shagged a girl on a holiday. I'd never had a short relationship, shorter than 2 years. Ever.
See, I just would not expect that from you. Like, the way you speak and stuff like that.
That's crazy.
And you talk about shagging and stuff like that and your whatever. I just would have thought you were an absolute animal.
It was, as soon as a girl showed me any attention, boom, I was in love.
Really?
So it was very... I was just one of the guys at school that just couldn't... I was nerdy. I'm able to express myself with words. And as we've already established in this podcast, what girls are attracted to until about 25 is the strong, silent, mysterious, masculine type. Might not be an arsehole, just might be a bit like a footballers, for example. That's why girls fancy footballers. They're athletic, they're silent, they're strong. And I was the opposite. I'm in shape now, but up until 5 years ago, I'm a pepper army with features, very, very able to express my emotions, which 18-year-old girls think, oh, he's gay.
Yeah.
Very musical. I like dancing. I'm a good dancer. I like acting, poetry. You know, there's nothing in there for working class girls. If I'd been born in a posh postcode, all the, you know, the slightly eccentric posh hot girls, I probably would have been shag central. But where I was from, I wasn't a carpenter. I wasn't a footballer. I didn't have a flash car and I had no muscles. So it was really hard. I didn't even kiss a girl at school. Nothing. Nada. So when I got to 16 and this one beautiful girl sort of came across we were at another kid's school ball in a posh area, sort of gatecrashing it. So all the girls were posh. Like, who's that guy? And I was just taken for what I am. Someone who's quite funny and able to express myself even at 16. This girl kissed me and that was it. I actually, this is pathetic. Cried on the way home, where I was so instantly in love. Pathetic. And then we were together for 3 years, and then it ran its course as teenage love does at 19. And then I was out recovering the first weekend in a nightclub, and through the smoke came this brunette girl, an inch taller than me. She must have seen me dancing or something. Had not spoke to her, had not seen her that night. Boom, her number went in my hand. That was it. We were together 3 years, and it sort of went on like that. Then I fell into stand-up comedy, and then you start getting female... For the first time in my life, I get female attention from everywhere. Never experienced it, didn't know what it's like to be attracted to women, because I've never experienced it. I've only ever been attractive to one woman. And so I got this female attention coming at me. At first, it was fine, because I was in a long-term five-year relationship. Then that split up, and I had my first taste of what it might be like to be single, to just fucking think, I could go out tonight and pull. I've never had... Power's become a bit of a toxic word for men to use, but you know what I mean. I've never had any ability to make a woman want to have a drink with me or anything. And there's nothing. And I made the same mistake again. I still went straight into another relationship, but with
when you started being successful.
I'd already been successful a couple of years at this point. So I split up with I split up with a girl I've been with for 5 years. And I go out single, work gets better, I'm single, and girls are starting to throw themselves at me. Nothing's happening.
Right.
Nothing's happening. It's the first girl that something happens with, sexually, I mean, boom, it happens again. I'm like, for fuck's sake, I've got feelings again. And I stay with her. The mistake I made this time was the memory of I could be shagging every night of the week sat in my head like a little gremlin. And weirdly, the person was my mum, who's like, if you carry on like this, just trying to put a ring on the finger of every girl who shows you attention, you are just going to keep thinking you're the one. So my mum had like pictures of me with my arms around, this is the one I'm going to marry. And it's about that fat at the back. She went, you need to be single for a year on purpose. So I split up with this girl, obviously, because my head wasn't right. And that relationship went, it's my only bad breakup, really, because the poor girl, my head wasn't right. You know, I shouldn't have been getting into a relationship. No cheating or anything, but I just wasn't, I had to tell her. You know, this is not love this time round. And so then I had a year forgive the language of calling it, my tour of duty in Vajganistan, where I was single for a year. I thought, I am going, listen, 35 years old, never been kissed by a girl 35. Who I'm not in love with. I thought, I think
that's good going.
I'm going for it. So I had a year where it was hare and tortoise stuff. All my friends, I overtook everyone. It was like Dane Bowers on steroids. It was unreal because I can hold a conversation. And obviously dating older women, a man can have a conversation rather than just a sperm bank with a bank account. I could actually have a chat. Hmm. So that was it. And in the middle of all that chaos, Lindsay, who I'm married to, was one of those girls. And I was like, oh, I had little feelings, but I had what I call my emotional condom on. That's where you don't allow yourself to fall in love with someone you got feelings for. So I carried on 6 months past that until Lindsay was like, look, this is ridiculous. What's going on? You said you're on this single thing, but you've seen me 5 or 6 times. You're sending me flowers.
And was this within that year?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Done the year?
No, within the year, I said to Lindsay.
Oh, you didn't do the year, though.
every single girl who I went out with, I said, this is where my head's at. I gave them the speech I just told you. I'm not some bastard that's been shagging my whole life. I've got to do this because I'm a man and it's built into my Neanderthal bit. I will offer you no stability, no exclusivity. You might never see me again. If you still want to get pissed and party, let's do it. So it was really clear, no bullshit. But I kept seeing Lindsay and she was like, come on, I've seen you in the papers. I'll be on the red carpet with a different girl. Then another girl on a red carpet. I even took one girl to a wedding and said, Lindsay's like, right, you're sending me flowers at work.
Yeah,
it's not normal like single love making anymore. It's like loving, you know, what's going on? It's time to make a decision. So I made it to 10 months and then I said to her, do you know what, you're great, boom. And I ring went on the finger within a couple of months in and the rest is history.
Really?
Yeah,
that's amazing. And then just like ever since you've, obviously I'm not asking like if you cheated or anything like that, I just mean like ever since you've been like, yeah, I had that year.
I had that, was good because it wasn't a mystery anymore. Like a lot of men who get together when they're 19 or 20 with their missus, like they do around my way, it's always at the back of their head, what would it have been like to have been single? Well, I know what it's like. And it gets boring about 6 months because I condensed 3, 4, 5 years experience into 6 months. So maybe if you were just working a regular job and meeting girls at the weekend in the club, it would probably get boring after about 3 years would be my guess. And also it started to scare me. I've never really spoken about this before. It started to scare me that I was unable not to go out and get laid. So I, as we know with my phone, I don't like anything that's like addictive behavior. And I'd be, I might be on tour. You know what that's like. So you're doing telly in the day, bit of radio, might have done a corporate video, and then I've been out on the road. I'm fucked. I'm like a skull with hair on. I've got one night at home on my own. That should be sci-fi movie, curry takeaway, beer, catching up with a mate, something nerdy. And I'd sit down and I'd think, I could go out and meet a fit girl tonight. And the Neanderthal part of my brain would go, imagine in the nursing home, you'll be remembering that you didn't shag tonight. And then I'd be out. And I was like,
really?
Yeah, I just
had to do it.
Like addictive behaviour to the, and then it's
but
like,
what if you went out and you didn't see anyone? Would it just be like, oh, she'll do? Not in like the least worst way possible, but.
Yeah, well, it just didn't, I'm not like showing off, it just didn't happen, did it? Because what it was just, it was only a year like that. I'm not proud of it. I'm a bit proud of it. And, but it's, It was a bit, it wasn't a she'll do. It was finding someone I was genuinely attracted to, got a connection with. And because I've got language, things move quite quickly. I think so, women, once they get past 25, find that refreshing. So I'm able to have a conversation before you know it.
True.
If I get Cane Villas, Ibiza was the worst. I mean, it was terrible. I did an appearance at one club and I was just snogged about 100 girls, snogging like I'm 8 or something.
Snogging.
How many girls did you snog tonight? And 5. I thought that was the most best thing I'd ever done. Not shag, snogging.
Is that what you used to do? Don't. I always say that. I'm like, my sister used to go out. I remember going out with her when I was like, at Time and Envy in Romford. And I was like 14 and I'd go out with them. And they'd all be like, it would be like this thing where they'd count how many they'd snogged that night. And I was just, I've never been like that. I just couldn't face that. I thought of snogging loads of people. Ugh. Imagine trying to be a 15-year-old now, trying to snog through COVID.
It's not COVID secure, like my behaviour.
It's not COVID
anyway, safe. So I had 6, 9 months, and yes, when I was with Lindsay, we weren't exclusive, but then as soon as I decided we got married, that was it. the drawbridge came down, because I've been there, I've done that. And also she's taken the advice. She's married an older man. I'm 12 years older than her. Mm-hmm. So it's a safer bet, apparently. Although I will give you one more crushing statistic before you move things on. The decade of a man's life where he's most likely to cheat on a long-term relationship. Do you know what that is?
No. Do I want to know?
70s. He's 70s.
What? No.
Statistical fact. Google it if you don't believe me.
Why? Why 70s?
Think it through. Just think from an evolutionary perspective. If you're nearing the end of your life and you're a fertile man, what is the most logical thing for that man to do in an animal level? Not on a moral level, not on a human level, not on a spiritual level. So up until recently, maybe the stats have changed, but the study we had when we did my podcast is in his 70s.
At least now I will know it's coming. Yeah, I thought I'd done well by marrying a man that was like 9 years older than me, but clearly I've not thought this through.
It's 12 years between me and Lindsay. We never notice it though. Like whenever I go, do you remember? No, she's like, yeah. She always remembers the same programs I remember. When she says, do you remember this? I don't know. I suppose 12 might be the maximum. I don't know.
I think I'm always waiting for the point where he'll grow up, and I've now just come to the conclusion that that just won't happen.
He will be laughing at his farts in his 60s, deal with it.
And then I suppose I always ask at the end of a podcast for people to kind of give their three main tips. So as you talk so much about men's mental health and men opening up, what would be your three main tips to encourage men to kind of open up and have conversations?
Check in twice. It just doesn't happen. So, for example, don't worry, I'm changing the names. Let's say my mate David the other day, we knew, I could just tell something's wrong. So someone drops goat porn on the group. Someone says something about Arsenal. Someone says something about Tottenham. Someone sends a picture of some boobs off someone who's on TV. And Dave's not joining in the way he normally would. Yeah. And Dave's just sending the odd normal remark. Dave might leave the group. I'm overwhelmed with my alerts on my phones, guys. Don't panic. I'm just leaving the group for you. To me, that is like something bad is going wrong. Dave's got a good job, an amazing, a beautiful girlfriend who he loves and he loves her, and a great house. Everything's great. So what's going on with Dave? So you send on the side group, you're right, Dave. Yeah, fine, mate, just stressed. And that's where a lot of men leave it. That's not good enough. Keep going until he tells you to fuck off, you're annoying him. That's when you stop. Mm-hmm. If he doesn't tell you that, there is stuff there to be shared. It's as simple as that. Come on, Dave, you left the group, what's going on? Hit him with a phone call, hit him with a voicemail. Text and WhatsApp is such an easy get out as well. It's not the same as hearing someone's voice. And even hearing someone's voice on the phone is not the same as seeing someone in person. So what I would say to Dave on that occasion is, mate, can't bullshit me. And even if you are, I don't care. I fancy a pint. Where are we going? If you actually give a shit about this person, and particularly if your friendship group is men aged 29 to 51, that is the high risk group. Men, as they enter this phase we're talking about, their brain finishing growing and they get to 35, 40, it dawns on a lot of men, right, so wherever I am now, this is me. This is as much as I'm going to be. This is the most I'm going to be. It's bollocks, by the way. A lot of men start their most successful businesses in their 40s and 50s, but that's the thought that occurs to some men, and bang, that's when the suicide happens, to put it bluntly. Mm. So check in to an annoying degree. All that's going to happen is you'll be told, mate, I'm all right. Seriously, thank you, but I'm all right. Please leave me alone. And then you might need some time or you might need some space. I would still personally turn up at the front door with a six pack, personally. So I know it feels weird and it doesn't come easy if you're Terry and you're a plasterer and you just want to focus on grouting and send a picture of a goat being given a hand job by someone on a GIF. And I know that's your instinct, but check in more than once. You might save someone's life.
And the same for a woman trying to approach a man, just exactly the same. Trying to check
I guess
in.
So, yeah. I guess it's hard. What I will say is for wives and girlfriends, you might be a bit too close. You might be part of the thing he's insecure about. Not that you've done anything wrong, but if he feels like he's failing as a man to put a big enough rock on your finger or a flash enough car for you to drive in, or he's not giving the kids the life he should, you might be triggering in that sense.
A friend?
Yes. As a girl, you could message one of his friends and say, Lee, do you mind just or a brother or his mum or something like that. And the mum again could be problematic, but not everyone could be safe. But you do look at some of these stories and you do think, God, did everyone check in enough? You know, I lost a female friend last year, someone in the public eye who you all know used to present a very prominent TV show, reality dating show. And I wished I did check in twice. I did WhatsApp. I did iMessage. I wish I'd just fucking been a bit more annoying. I know on her list of friends, I'm down in like the DE list, but I was someone that would text and speak to her. Sometimes it's nice for a girl to speak to a boy, a straight man about men. You can get, it's just nice, and it, to speak to the opposite sex sometimes about stuff. Particularly, so I'd say to some of the lads, if you've got a female friend you can trust, sometimes it can be a good place to go, because a girl who you're not sexually or emotionally involved with and is not your sister or your mum can sometimes give you the LD on what's going on with your sex life or whatever or anything. So it is a regret that I did not, and I know it's stupid and irrational, I wish I'd been a bit more annoying when that was going on last year.
Same.
Just be annoying. You know, no one's ever topped themselves because their mate was annoyingly checking in on them. No one. No one.
I think that comes from as well, like you said, you were on the lower list of friends, and you feel like they've got other people to do that instead of you. And actually, sometimes the lower down the list you are, the easier it is for them to open up.
That's such an important point. The amount of times I've got in a... I might have got in an Uber with a driver who speaks English, but is from Afghanistan. And for whatever reason, I suddenly start telling him about my insecurities or being away from home or missing my children. That's my main thing, my child. My main thing with being a stand-up or any job where you have to be away from home is the heartbreak of I'm a shit dad, I'm not there for my daughter, she's growing up. It's like me and Lindsay are like divorced people sometimes because I'm away so much, and then I'll come home and Mina wants to play with me, so Lindsay runs off to get her chores done. It's like, fucking hell, we're handing the kids across like we're divorced. I just found myself sharing all this shit with some Afghan dude who just was doing like an £8 fare. So if I can share that with my taxi driver with English as a second language, maybe I could share it with, like you say, a lower tier friend. The girls group sometimes can be so close. Maybe there's, or a work colleague can sometimes be good if it's safe and a safe space. There's no easy solution, but particularly men aged 29 to 55, it's not COVID killing them. It's not testicular cancer. It's not heart attack. It's suicide. Number one cause of death. And that is unacceptable.
Very true. Thank you so much. I knew I was going to love talking to you. You can literally talk so much, but everything you say is so interesting.
Oh, there's a lot of money in it, that's why. When I pick up a microphone and put bums on seats.
Well, thank you so much. I think that would have been so interesting and so helpful for so many people.
My pleasure.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Open Mind. I hope this has really been helpful for you. If you have been affected by this episode or would like to find out any more information regarding mental health, then please head over to mind.org.uk. And please follow me on Instagram and look out for my stories where I reveal each new guest and collect all of your fantastic questions to put forward to them. See you next time. Are you trying to cut down on alcohol to boost your well-being? Well, personally, I love going out for drinks with my friends, but hate how I feel the morning after. And that's why I decided to moderate my alcohol intake with Atopia. They have an ultra-low alcohol spirit that tastes just as good as my usual drink without any of the nasty side effects or embarrassing photos. Looking after yourself is important, so why not take this month to get focused on your well-being? Join me in cutting down on alcohol intake today and start making the most out of every occasion with no regrets. Looking after yourself is important, so why not take this month to get focused on your well-being? Join me in cutting down on alcohol intake today and start making the most out of every occasion with no regrets. Wake up with a spring in your step and your well-being in check. Available from Waitrose and online.